listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades, from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of those. We got great stuff. Follow this show on Instagram and Twitter. I'm starting to do a lot more with it. I think even with regards to the show, I'm going to be talking about a couple specific plays. And one of the ways that you can, you know, I'm going to upload the video of those plays onto the Twitter account so you can kind of have something to reference. And it's not for everybody. My goal is to make it so that you can listen to the show and you don't need to have the video, but it's always nice to have if you want to know the exact play I'm trying to break down. So you can follow the Twitter account at Locked On Nuggets, and you'll never miss any of those. You can always follow me at Adam_Mades. Also, before we begin, really great week last week. I think probably my favorite single week of the show. I had just some great guests on. Steve Jones, who used to be an assistant coach, had Christopher Dempsey, Fred Katz with the Norman Transcript. Then had just a couple of really strong episodes, I thought, talking about Jokic's 41-point game, breaking down 10 players through 10 games, kind of going in, kind of doing a deep dive. So if you missed any of the shows, please go back and check them out. And also, if you want to advertise with the show, I've had some people hitting me up lately wanting to partner with the show and advertise. This is a very great opportunity. You know, I know what the price is for local radio ads. I know what their listenership is, and I know what my listenership is and our price is for advertisements. So get in contact with me. You know, you can email me denverstiffs@gmail.com. I'll respond to all inquiries. And let's put something together. Support this show. The people of the show, the people that listen to the show, I think are pretty supportive. And so there's some great opportunities there. This episode of the show is going to be two parts. The first part, a shortened kind of recap of the game with my notes. I always like to share my notes on the game, not necessarily recap the game because you watched it. Why do you need a recap? But I'll share with you my notes and my insights on the game. And in the second part, I'm going to bring on a Blazers blogger, a friend of mine, Dan Marang from Blazers Edge. A terrific Blazers Edge, by the way, one of the blogs that I look up to and try to mimic Denver Stiffs off of because I think they do a really, really good job over there. So I'm going to bring Dan Marang on and talk about the Nurkic unraveling that might be happening in Portland right now and kind of preparing us for the game ahead. This game against the Orlando Magic, I thought, was just such an encouraging one. And I have to preface it the same way I did with the Brooklyn Nets game. This was a tired team coming in on the second night of a back-to-back. I think despite their record, they have a good record, and they've been one of the surprise teams this year. I don't think they're actually a very good basketball team. But nonetheless, you know, it was really encouraging because before the game, Millsap made a comment, and he said, you know, like he addressed the team specifically about this game because there was the big high of beating Oklahoma City. That was a really gritty win. And then he said, you know, something to the effect of, you know, these games are the ones that, like, good teams just don't lose. If we're a good team, we don't lose these types of games against the Magic. In fact, we come out and take care of business. And kind of just got everybody focused. And it was so great because they came out and just really beat them down. It was a butt kicking from start to finish. There was a little bit of a shakiness, you know, at the end of the third, start of the fourth, but the Nuggets rebounded pretty well. I mean, they were up 30. They ended up only going up like 14 or 13, I think was as close as it got, and then broke it wide open again. So just a really, really dominating performance. And I think if there was, you know, first of all, there was a great crowd, which I think is important and noteworthy because one of the goals of this homestand, I thought, in my opinion, was to kind of get some momentum with the home crowd. And you can't lose at home. One of the problems the Nuggets had last year is they had a really slow start at home. And I think if people are going to buy tickets and come out to the game, you got to reward them with hard, you know, great effort first and foremost. You can't come out and fall flat on your own home court. You got to, if you're going to go down, you're going to go down swinging. But second of all, you have to give them something exciting to cheer for. And I thought this entire homestand was great. The loss to Golden State is whatever. Every other game, the Nuggets came out and either kicked butt and dominated and looked like an all-star team, or they gritted out a win against a good team. So this one was really good. In the half court, the ball was really popping. This game to me was all about you know, you knew they were probably going to win. You knew they were probably going to win off of offensive rebounds and second chance points because that was the matchup. The Nuggets were really good at getting those second chance points and offensive boards. The Magic were really bad at protecting the or defensive rebounding. So there was kind of a style fight that worked in Denver's favor in a couple different ways I'll get to. But the half-court offense was the thing that the Nuggets have to get going. And I think their half-court offense has shown a lot of improvement in the last week, really. It's just shown some flashes. And so in this game in particular, just using cleaningtheglass.com's stats, they do a really cool thing with half-courts where they break down half-court possessions versus putbacks versus transition. They kind of break them into three categories. And the Nuggets had 118, but per this site, 118.3 points per 100 possessions. That's a 118 offensive rating, which would be, I believe, either the best in the NBA or the second best right behind the Golden State Warriors, who are like shattering their own records at the moment for offensive efficiency. But it would have been like a historic number of just half-court offense. That's how good the Nuggets half-court offense was in this game. It ranked in the 98th percentile of all games played, so it's like one of the four or five best single-game half-court outings of any team in the NBA all season. And so that was really encouraging. It wasn't just that they were beating up on a little team, but how they were doing it, and they were doing it in the half-court. And I think if you watch this game, you saw that the ball was moving. You saw that there was a lot less deliberate action. I think one of the things that the Nuggets have done early on is they've run a lot of set plays, and not just set plays, but when they've run the set plays, it hasn't been a whole lot of just kind of like taking the best shot available. It's almost like we're running this play to get this specific look. And I thought in this game they ran a lot of like secondary break type action, elbow strong, these certain sets that are kind of the basis of them getting into their offense. But I felt like the ball was just flowing and they were kind of finding the right play, you know, not necessarily like sticking to the script, but just kind of using the script as a general framework and finding offense. So that's what I think was so encouraging about this one is that it was at that half court offense. And then the other thing is getting to the rim. The Nuggets had been really, really bad. They were so good last year at taking shots at the rim. This year, I think they're one of the teams that near the bottom overall in getting to the rim. But they got to the rim on 37% of their attempts, which ranks in the 67th percentile, according to cleaningtheglass.com. So two very encouraging signs from this game. Millsap and Jokic both just seem to be playing together a lot better. That's a big part of it. I'm going to get to Jamal Murray, who obviously was the player of the game, so don't think I'm going to leave him out. We're going to talk about him. But Millsap and Jokic, I think, is where this team starts and stops. And the last, you know, the first 3 weeks or so have really been a story for the Nuggets about those two guys. As much the point guard play is obviously really huge, but the Nuggets are going to win or lose games based on how well those guys kind of fit with each other. And I thought that in this game in particular, they really started to read each other better. And they got a couple of 4-5 pick and roll, not necessarily straight buckets. They did get a bucket out of it in the first quarter, but they just were able to kind of scramble the defense, which is really what you want with your actions, as much as getting a point, as you kind of want to force the defense to kind of trail the play. And they were able to do that with the 4-5 pick and roll. And one of the ways they were able to do it, or actually the way they were able to do it. So if you just imagine, first of all, the team has had really good spacing, and they've used that 4-5 pick and roll, usually Jokic setting a screen for Millsap when Millsap has the ball. And what happens is that's two bigs. There's usually two bigs guarding them. And the bigs will just switch it because it's easy. You don't give up a lot of space, and there you don't give up an advantage. But what Jokic and Millsap have done is you put a guy in each corner. This is usually in like a secondary break action. You kind of spread the court with three-point shooters that are way outside, so either in the corners or on the wing, drawing people out of the paint. Then with your two bigs, you know, you kind of set that screen at the top of the key, but what happens is right as they switch, Jokic will slip, meaning really quickly, right as that switch happens, he'll slip and seal the big guy that's switching on to him. And the first time they did it in the first quarter, it was a wide open layup for Nikola Jokic right at the rim with like nobody even around to contest it. But later on in the game, they got things out of it by just running that action and then forcing the help. The help would kind of react early to Jokic rolling on that. And then you just kind of pass and everybody's kind of just like moving the ball to kind of find the open guy and scramble the defense until they can no longer keep up. And it worked, and it worked great. And the reason I point this out isn't because it's like, oh, they need to run that set more. It's more about, you know, the Nuggets offense, where I've always thought this is headed and where I still think they're working towards, is when everybody just kind of knows what happens situationally. Basketball is a game of eternal recurrences, meaning there's nothing new that happens. It's just, how does this guy guard? There's a million different possibilities on any given possession, and you've maybe never seen the exact combination of things, but you've seen them all isolated individually. So, for example, two big guys switching and the spacing in the paint being open, once you kind of create a chemistry with the players of like, oh, this is what that guy does in this situation, and then I know that if this guy helps off from the weak side, I know Wilson in the corner likes to do this thing, and then you know, Jamal Murray likes to set that back screen and run an exchange on the weak side at the same time. Once everybody kind of just starts reading each other, that's when it almost doesn't matter what plays you're running. It's just guys kind of knowing where to be in relation to what the defense is doing. And I thought the Nuggets in this game had a lot of moments where it felt like, okay, they're really starting to figure each other out because they're just kind of playing basketball. They have their offense set, but they're just kind of reading and reacting off of each other. And this should be encouraging, guys. The Nuggets defense looks really, really, really good in times. I think they're like 15th right now in the league in overall defensive efficiency. But even in this game, you look at it, they hold the Magic to 23. Magic, a good offense, 23 points in the first, 24 in the second, and then they hold them to 30 points apiece in the third and fourth. But again, some of this is garbage time. Like, I feel Denver's defense is actually better than it looks. It's just that they give up these like 5-minute runs where teams will go on huge runs against them. And I don't remember what game it was a couple back where Denver, you know, that last 6 minutes of the game, the Nuggets got outscored like 35-7 or something ridiculous. Like, Denver's defensive rating, I think, is actually a lot better than it looks. It's just there's a couple of garbage time games where it's kind of hurt them a little bit. So I think really over the last 10 games or so, they've looked like a very, very, very good defensive team. I think over the last 8 games, they are 4th offense and 5th in net rating. I think that part of that is that they've been home, but I think that they actually are kind of rounding into form. So it's very, very, very encouraging. I mentioned I was going to talk about Jamal Murray, and he was phenomenal in this game. I think his shot opens up so much for him. He played this game, I thought, with tremendous confidence. 16 points in the first quarter, finished with 32, so he got half of his scoring done in that first quarter. 6 of 9 from the three-point line. For Jamal, I think so much of his game is about knocking down shots, and he's going to get to a point, I believe, at some point in his career where he's just consistent with that jumper. You look at Gary Harris, man, that guy is consistent with his jumper. You know, he's going to hit like 40% of the shots he takes from downtown, and it's almost like every 4 out of 10. It's not like he makes 10 in a row and then he's going to go on this like, you know, 20, he's going to miss the next 20 or whatever. He's just consistent. He's going to hit 40% of his shots, maybe slightly more even. And I think Jamal Murray's going to get to a point like that, and when he does, it opens up so much more of his game. Those mid-range, those like one-legged off-balance shots he really had going. And honestly, that's his biggest role, especially on this team. There's a lot of talk of he doesn't need to be a John Stockton. A lot of the traditional point guard duties are he's not going to be responsible for, but he is going to be responsible for knocking down shots, and he hasn't done a great job of that on the whole this season. He's kind of been in a little bit of a shooting slump, but I just know he's going to get to a point, and maybe he's there now. Maybe I do think with shooters in particular, their shot is pretty reliant on you know, ball movement and just kind of knowing their place in the offense and everybody kind of reading and reacting better. So I suspect as the offense kind of starts to get better chemistry, Murray's shot's going to go down more and more. I think those two things play hand in hand. But there's also a feedback loop there that the more Murray can knock down shots, the more the offense can start to hum because the defense has to respect it more. So there's a nice feedback loop there. But he is up to 32%. It sounds terrible because that's not a great three-point percentage, but he was at 25, and he's just moving up slowly. I suspect that'll continue to climb throughout the season. And back to Millsap Jokic really quickly. You know, Millsap, after the game, had a nice quote. This is in an article from Christopher Dempsey on Nuggets.com. He said, "I dreamt of getting to a place where I can just get out there and just play, and I'm pretty much there now." This is why it's indicative of where the team is right now, as I think that they're starting to click. I don't think they're there by any means. This was one game against a bad team on a second night of a back-to-back. But I think they're headed in the right direction, and it just looks like, especially on rewatch, it looks like guys are kind of figuring out where they're supposed to be, and I'm just excited. I'm excited for the next month ahead, because I think that the next month is where we really start to see the team take a leap, and we start to see what this team is really capable of. Moutier had two really nice plays I want to call out, because one of my critiques in my Wednesday column, Pickaxe's Nose on DenverStiffs.com, is that he takes a lot of ill-advised early shot clock shots where, especially in really good lineups, you know, the Jokic-Fareed lineup that I just love, that I think should be an offensive juggernaut. He takes a lot of possessions that a lot of shots where you're just like, man, just work the ball around. You guys are going to get a layup. Well, in this one, he had two plays that really jumped out, both in the first quarter. One ended with Barton getting free throws, another with a Jamal Murray three-pointer, where Moutier passed up. He was aggressive. He got to the rim but had a shot that he was almost certainly going to miss because it was, like, contested. I think one, it was like a one-on-one against Jonathan Isaac, where Isaac did a really good job of kind of containing him. And he almost shot the fadeaway, but instead he just reset the play. And that play ended with a Jamal Murray open three on a Moutier assist. Moutier, later in the possession, like 10 seconds later, gets the ball back, drives, collapses the defense, kicks out. Jamal Murray, three-pointer. It plays like that kind of break the back of the defense. And I was just so happy to see Moutier pass up. You know, you always hear pass up a good shot for a great shot. Well, that was passing up a bad shot for a great shot, and I think that's really where Moutier is at right now, because he has so much talent. It's just kind of getting to eliminate those easy dumb plays, and I thought he did that in this one. Both Murray and Moutier had really bad post-entry passes in this game, and I think that's a bit of a concern, because this team, Wilson Chandler, can really exploit mismatches in the post. He's one of the team's best at that. And then Millsap and Jokic are just going to be – the post-up is going to be such a big part of early offense for them. A lot of times what happens is the Nuggets will scramble either in transition or kind of in that secondary break. They'll get an early pick and roll and then go down to the post. You just have to be able to get that ball in there quickly and accurately, and both guys, I thought, struggled with that in this game. But I want to wrap up with playing you this clip from Bart, and I put it on DenverStiffs.com, but I know not everybody – I don't know why, but I know not everybody reads that site. So I want to play it for you so you hear this, because it was just it's such a great quote about where the team is right now.
Do you get tired during games? Coach said before the game one of the reasons he put you into the lineup because he knew you guys were going to have to play a ton of minutes tonight.
Yeah, I wasn't tired at all. I'm just – my mindset right now is at a whole nother level, man. I'm so excited to play basketball, and I'm so excited about this team, man. I just really think we could be good. And, you know, I'm just focused on winning, winning, winning. So I don't get tired. Like I said, I'm in a whole nother space, in a whole nother place right now. And I'm just with it. Whatever, you know, whatever it's going to take, I'm with it. And I don't get tired. I love basketball, so it's nothing.
When did you sense that, okay, we could be really good? Was there kind of a moment where you feel like the light went on for you personally or for the
team? I mean, I knew at the end of last year. I knew at the end of last year, and then once we signed Paul, I was like, yeah, it's really going to be on now. Like, we got a guy who's used to winning. I feel like that was all we needed, that one piece that could, you know, just calm us down, and you could play through him. He's unselfish. I mean, he just brings a lot to the table, and he early in the season, he's just always talking to us, hey, we're going to win this game. Hey, let's do this, let's do that. And he's just vital. And then with the talent we got and everyone growing up, you know, coming back with another year under the belt, we're talented, man. We're talented.
So I just love that quote. I mean, Barton, first of all, is probably the best. Actually, not probably. He certainly is the best guy, like, to interview on the team. He's insightful. He's interesting. He's funny. And he's honest. He really is, I think, like a keeping it 100 kind of guy. And it's just – so it's always great talking to him. But, you know – we heard from Jokic a couple games ago where he's like, the question wasn't even about this, and Jokic just stopped and he goes, you know, I really like this team. Like everybody plays for each other, and I really like this group. I've talked about how starting with that Charlotte butt kicking and on to Atlanta, how this team was like noticeably rooting each other on and off of the bench and everything and just coming together. And so you see all these signs about it. And then for Barton to kind of articulate it, just, you know, he has a funny way of talking and not funny. He has like a fascinating and like almost poetic way of talking and talking about how he personally is on this whole other level just because he feels it, he senses it. And I think it's so encouraging. And that's really what I think this homestand represents. You know, that Miami win I thought was a pivotal one for this team's confidence. And it's funny how, you know, that game came down to Deion Waiters' shot rattled out. It was a great looking shot that could have gone either way, and it rattled out. But I think that one was such a big one for this team's confidence. And then the Oklahoma City game, just the same thing, like closing out a game in the fourth quarter against a very good team with three All-Stars was so big for them. And I just think that collectively the team is kind of in the zone right now. They're kind of in it. And that's not to say that they figured all things out, because I don't think they have. I think they're moving in that direction and at a very encouraging pace. But this Portland game is going to be such a fun test for them in that regard. And just like, you know, I think they're better than Portland. I just think they're a better team, and Portland's kind of falling apart. Not really falling apart, but they're going through a rocky road at the moment. And then the other thing is, talking to players after the game, nobody wanted to say it on record. These guys really want this one. I think they know that this it was funny, because I thought that the team really didn't respond very well last year when they took on, you know, Nurkic kind of said some parting words and everybody still went up and dapped him up and stuff. I think the team kind of knows, like, you know what, we weren't ready last year, but we got to send a message this year. And I'm just so excited for this game. Now, it could go any way. I'm guessing Portland will probably open as the favorite in the game. But you know what? I think this team is ready for it, and I think that they're taking it seriously. Like I said, nobody would say anything on record, but I think this team is ready to go. So I'm excited for it, and this was a terrific homestand. Let's welcome in our guest. He's a buddy of mine, one of my friends around the blogosphere, and all around good guy, other than the fact that he roots for the Portland Trailblazers. It's Dan Morang. Dan, thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. It's good to be seen or heard or whatever this is now. I don't know. The darkness outside of the winters here, they just kind of, you know, being seen, heard, whatever.
It's good for you to be heard, because we have an interesting game coming up. And before we get to that, I do want to plug you. Dan writes for Blazers Edge, which is, as I mentioned, one of the best, if not the best, blogs in the SB Nation NBA network. And he also hosts the Blazers Edge podcast, which is just called the Blazers Edge podcast.
Yeah, we got real creative with that name.
You guys are creative. But so this is a big game. I think that Denver's going in, but this will drop tonight, so most likely everybody will be listening to this on game day. But yeah. The Nuggets are going into Moda Center to take on the Trailblazers. And before we get into that, well, actually, let me just ask you this. Do you consider this a big game? Not considering where you guys are and kind of the struggles and this and that, but just, do you consider it a big game, Denver versus Portland?
I think now it is.
Right.
I think with the way, and that's not even just like standings wise, I think with the way Denver's building towards things, and you and I have talked about this over the last couple of years, that they've been kind of building towards something. And that's right. The first time that's been a thing for Denver for quite a while.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of crappy to say that. But like there's a framework that makes sense now.
Yeah.
And while the games have been entertaining between Denver and Portland, no matter what's been going on with each particular franchise over the last couple of years, it was nothing more than that. It was always like, okay, yeah, this will be a fun game.
But I mean, now, that's really
now it's like, oh, now it's now it may matter. That's right. Crazy.
It may matter, but I think more than honestly, I don't think this game does matter. Actually, quite frankly, like, you know, Denver will either be 8-5 or 7-6. What is that? What they? I don't even remember what their record is at the moment. But it's not going to make
Portland will drop below 500 with a loss. Which they're 6-6 heading in.
So, which would be like, you know, great. I think for like from a Denver perspective, it's like awesome to say, okay, yeah, that can happen. So Denver's 8-5, so they could be 9-5, which is great. Like that's a really good record through 14 games. But I think more than anything, this is important game for Denver for like existential reasons. And one of
it's a measuring stick for where they are, right?
But I think even more than that. So here's the thing that, you know, ask Malone after practice the other day, does this team have an edge? Because last year, I think they were kind of a soft team, like a skilled team and a young team, but just didn't have like that bully. And somebody said, does Millsap now give him an edge? And Malone was like, no, this team doesn't have an edge. Well, I think they're going to have an edge to get through this game. And I think they're going to have to take it personal. I mean, you know, Nurkic after the game last year, oh, have a nice summer.
Nice summer. You
know, he had a bunch of troll moments on Twitter where he was just trying to go all in. I hope those guys take it personally. I don't know if they did last year, but I hope they do this year. Nurkic certainly takes it personally, wouldn't you say?
Well, here's the thing. Post game. Post practice.
Take us on a stroll here, Dan.
So for those that aren't aware, there's a little kerfuffle here in Portland, because Yusuf Nurkic didn't play the closing minutes of the past two games.
Oh wait, what? What happened?
Oh yeah. So
he handled that really well though, because he's a team first kind of guy. You know, he's not.
So
I've read his Twitter since he's been in Portland. He's team, not I.
There's been some things against the Brooklyn Nets. He was actually playing very well on the offensive end. Defensive end in the first half, he was okay. But the second half, he came out. He played okay, but he got barked at a few times by the Blazers assistant coach for lackadaisical effort defensively. And whether or not
when
these
you say
two
barked
are...
at, was this like on was this on TV? Like everyone could see them yelling at each other.
It's hard to pick up.
Okay.
It's not like it wasn't Terry Stotts, you know, out at midcourt giving a full lambasting from the sideline. This was David Vanderpool up from the bench singling out Nurkic, and this was pointed out by multiple media outlets.
Okay.
If you look for it, you can find it. But it this wasn't like a huge grandstanding kind of thing. However, whether or not the two were linked or not, Nurkic played a whopping 54 seconds in the fourth quarter. And he was by far the best player for the Blazers going into the fourth quarter.
Okay.
So my thought here is that this may have been a teaching moment, because Terry Stotts said they went small because the Nets went small. I don't know if you sign or you make Nurkic part of the big three, and you make those declarations going into the season, that he's part of the big three. If you're going to sit him when the Brooklyn Nets go small,
right? Right.
Unless there's something else going on.
Right.
So going back to, you know, how the Denver Nuggets may look at this game, I think they may have been doing a little bit of optics coverage after practice today, because Bosnian Beast says he's over revenge games.
Oh.
He's over those.
So he's trying to downplay tomorrow.
Yeah. So I think there may be this isn't huge. This isn't like what went on in Denver and kind of trying to reel people back off the ledge. It's something worth keeping your eye on for if you're a Portland fan. If you're Denver, you're probably just going, see, I told you. I don't think it's to that level yet. But it's not a good look.
I don't either. Like, it took a lot to get Nurkic to the point where he was. I mean, not a lot. Like, I think he should have lasted longer and been, you know, more mentally strong. I've been very vocal about that, but it wasn't like one day he was upset or two games in a row he was upset about minutes. It was a long period of time,
yeah,
with, you know, and some intricacies. So I don't think that'll get there, but I do wonder, you know, I was listening. Matt Moore kind of pointed me to the Locked On Blazers podcast. For whatever reason, he was listening to that and he said, hey, fast forward to the 6 minute mark. Just listen to this like 3 minutes. And I got to say, It was like the best 3 minutes of my life. It was like listening to the two guys. I don't even know their names, but they're two guys going back and forth about how much they hate Nurkic and oh, he's such a baby and he doesn't try it. And it was basically all the stuff that we, you know, here in Denver we saw, you know, where he's this super talented guy. Like, nobody denies his talent. He had games last year of like 30, 10, 5, 5, and 5.
He can make a 30-10 game look like, I mean, like any of these guys that are out there right now, just like a Jokic or a Porzingis. Like, he has that talent, and that's not kind of hyperbole. I mean, he can make those games just a poof appear out of nowhere. So I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. So it's kind of interesting to see at least the formation of the cracks. And I will say it's interesting that he's trying to downplay the rivalry game, because I feel the opposite about Denver, and who knows how they're going to come out. They've got a lot of just chill dudes, you know, like Gary Harris, who might not even play tomorrow night. It's just like
Will Barton.
Will Barton's chill, but he's a gamer. He doesn't forget. Yeah, he's a gamer. He's bringing it tomorrow. I promise you that. Will Barton is bringing it tomorrow. But like Wilson Chandler, laid back guy, you know, even Jokic, you know, I just don't picture Jokic like, you know, like too like crazy for any specific game. So they have some, but I do think that the team knows. I think it means a lot to the Nuggets, probably means more to the Nuggets than the Blazers. So that's why I'm so interested about it. But I'm looking here, and I wanted to ask you this, because some interesting trends when you look at Portland's on-off splits, and I know it's early, like these things can flip in a week. But Damian Lillard, pretty big plus, no surprise there. CJ McCollum, a pretty big minus, minus four. Evan Turner's a positive.
Yeah.
Harkless, a big negative. Nurkic, a pretty big negative. Yep. And then you go to the, then you go to the bench, and you got Al-Farouq Aminu, who I think is like the key to your guys' team. I mean,
well, he was having a career year before he rolled his ankle and turned it into an L the other day.
So is he out then?
He's out. Oh, he's definitely out. His ankle was the size of a grapefruit the other day. So
And so then you got a bunch of negatives off the bench. Like, there's not really a whole ton. Ed Davis, I guess, is the positive.
Davis and Connaughton, beyond Turner, are the contributors. Right now. Connaughton has come in and basically replaced Alan Grabb at 1/18 the cost.
Oh, that's nice.
It's wonderful.
But I'm wondering now, like, so what has Nurkic's season specifically been like with the team? Because I know last year was like the perfect fit. Is it looking like that perfect fit still?
Offensively, they try to do some things differently with him going into the season. They wanted to feature him more in the post.
Mistake. And here's the thing. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
This is what Denver did. And I wondered, like, why? Like, he is not a good post player. He's like a really
good... It's the allure of post play. And you and I have talked about this. Like, his footwork is magical.
It doesn't matter. We have so
much... The end result isn't... Like, he'll rush a shot, or he'll get lackadaisical on the finish. But you watch the footwork, and you get mesmerized by it. Because it's beautiful. It's so quick. I mean, he had granted, it's Timofey Mozgov. But he had a drop-step spin move... on the left block that was faster than probably 90% of the guards in the league. And it was just like, how does a 300-pound guy move that quickly, that brilliantly, that smoothly, and get that shot off so cleanly? And that's the enticing part. So Portland starts force-feeding the post.
But do you know what percentile he is on post-ups right
now? It's god-awful. It's
the
absolutely 19th atrocious.
Percentile.
Yeah, no. And that's actually improved. Yeah. No, I looked at this, and I was screaming about it to start the season. And I want them to – you have to put him down there every now and then.
Right.
Let him eat, because every big man wants to go down there and eat every now and then. I think even the finesse guys, if you want to call them that, even Anthony Davis or Giannis, any of those guys, they want to get one of those, you know, every quarter or so. That's fine. But Portland decided 4 games ago now that they were going to feature Nurkic in the pick and roll heavily. Yeah. It was against Gobert, and somebody asked me, you know, how do they deal with Gobert? I go, you don't straight post him. That's the worst thing. You can't let a static offense go right at Rudy Gobert. That's the worst thing you could possibly do, is let him key in on you the entire time. Right. Get his big butt rolling to the rim. Yeah. The second they did that, his efficiency and Portland's play skyrocketed on the offensive side.
That's how you use him. And the reason I think it's interesting is I just wonder, you know, we know with Dwight, like he was one of the best pick and roll players in the league, if not the best, like offensive rebounder.
For a 3-year period, he was the best dive guy in the league off the pick and roll.
But what did he want? He wanted to post up, like for whatever reason. Like, and I wonder with Nurkic sometimes, like you talk about the footwork. I wonder if he sees himself as this like Hakeem Olajuwon, when it's like, dude, you can post up a little bit. But really what we want you to do is all this other stuff. So it's just, I'm just kind of throwing that out there as because it was the same thing in Denver. I thought when they tried the Jokic-Nurkic combination to start the year last year, Denver's offense was really just posting Nurkic up every single time down court. It felt like, at least.
That's what Portland did the first few games. And it did cause some stagnation within the offense beyond Nurkic not converting.
Right.
Portland's not a team that everybody wants to talk about. How Portland's this dynamic offense. Really, they don't pass the ball that much. Mm. Like they're in the bottom third of the league in passes per possession. Wow. I think they're second to last or bottom five for sure in assists per game right now.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not a team that creates in that fashion.
So
when you stagnate like that, you're causing more problems than you probably need to create.
So Portland's struggling out the gate so far, but I mean, it's so early. 6-6 isn't really struggling. It is, though,
when you look at their schedule. They have the fourth easiest schedule in the league, and they're playing more home games than anybody.
Right.
That's the concern right now is they had, of their first 16 games, 13 or 14 are at home.
So with this game being such a because I think it might not be emotional for like Dame and CJ, but it's going to be emotional for Nurkic no matter what he says. Like,
absolutely.
It's going to be an emotional one. If Denver comes in and just like hammers, puts the beat down on, which is not, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying if that happens.
I think it's a possibility because I think right now Portland emotionally is scattered.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was getting at. So
Dame hasn't been Dame. I mean, yeah, he's had some. His clutch moments have been great, but I mean, if you look at his percentages right now, he's shooting 40% from the floor and 30% from three.
Yeah,
like this isn't the typical Dame that we've seen. Like he's struggling. The Blazers, their top five guys as far as scoring, are all below 52% at the rim. They're not converting layups. I mean, there's something going on with this team beyond. Nurkic and a commitment to defense. There's something that's just off kilter that's just kicking them around.
They're fifth in defensive rating, though. So is their defense kind of holding them afloat? Is that the
idea? Is. That's the thing is I think that's part of it. I think guys like Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are, and this sounds weird, they're so not used to playing defense for such a long period of time and with such commitment. I think they're getting tired legs.
So it's kind of a stylistic change.
You know, I was giving 40% on defense. I'm now giving 75%. And those up, down, ups, that third, fourth possession, you know, I'm getting a little dead leg on my jumper. I'm not getting the lift that I'm used to getting on that Euro step. I think part of that is working through that. At least I hope that's the case because the guys that seem to be impacted the most as far as their shooting percentages, particularly inside the paint where you're really trying to elevate and go through contact, are the guys that were the weakest on defense last year.
So that's interesting. So tell me, with this team, how do you see this game going? Like, if you had to make a prediction, and I have to preface this by saying, Dan, I know you. You're like me. You are a sports cynic. There's two types of fans, right? The fan that thinks their team's never going to lose, which is like every Denver Broncos fan. I can't tell you how many Broncos fans coming into tonight's game are like, oh, New England can't beat us in Denver. They never beat us. And I'm like, dude, this team sucks. So there's that fan, and then there's the fan that always thinks the sky is falling. You're definitely the second type. But what's your prediction for this game?
I'm not sky is falling, but I'm easily the pessimist.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for the Blazers win here, like the big time win. I think they need to win, and I think they'll realize that. So I'm leaning towards the Blazers figuring this one out. And if they do, it's going to be another close game. Because that's apparently all Portland can do. They can blow Phoenix out by 40 and then get in close games the rest of the way. Right. If it goes sideways, though, it's going to go sideways in favor of Denver. Because Portland's they're not right mentally kind of coming into this.
So Denver, I think, has defensively really figured some things out, and they just look great. I think Jokic looks phenomenal defensively. I know I've always said this, that I thought Jokic was a good defender and like in hiding. This year, I think he's been great. He's got the best defensive rating on the team. He's like best. All the advanced stats love him defensively.
We could just go ahead and say all the advanced stats love.
Well, the offensive stats like think he's like Michael Jordan.
He's back up there in like top six and everything.
Right. But defensively, in particular, I just feel part of it is I think the team is challenging him. Part of it is I think there's enough scoring on the offense now that he's like taking on less of a load there. Like you mentioned, playing two ways is so tough. And Will Barton touched on this the other day about how you kind of do have to pick your spot sometimes, like offense and defensive end. You have to learn how to kind of balance that. So I think
that's a real thing for anybody who doesn't realize that. And there was like the people that want to say, oh, if I was a professional athlete, I'd give it 100% every possession. No,
yeah,
you wouldn't.
Right.
That's not an actual thing, people.
It's like saying you would sprint the marathon or something. You just can't do it.
you have to pick and choose your moments, and you have to realize when the your guy that you're on is not the guy that's looking to attack the entire possession. That's what comes with you look at LeBron. The guy knows when to engage and when to disengage.
Right.
I mean, that's for whatever reason, I think that's the guy I kind of always point to that understands when to turn it on and off. And I think that's a huge part for a growing team like Denver is like knowing when to turn it on and off.
Are you hyped for the game? Like, are you personally invested in it?
No, I remember when we talked about, you know, heading into the season, I picked Portland to be the bottom of the barrel in the division.
Right.
And that wasn't necessarily a shot at Portland. I just didn't see them really getting any better. Yeah, Nurkic is here, but there were still a ton of issues that Nurkic doesn't solve. There's still a gaping hole at the wing. Dame and CJ have inefficiencies in their game. So, yeah, I think this division's just a crapshoot.
Let me ask you this, because they didn't extend Nurkic, right? Did they have an opportunity to extend him?
Yep. They're being smart. I would, too, right, after giving Evan Turner and Allen Crabbe that money.
But I just wonder because, and maybe I'm reading between the lines, and this was kind of mentioned on that Locked On Blazers podcast about how the coaching staff in front office do not appear to have Nurk fever the way the rest of Portland does. And so
I would agree with that. I think a lot of the narrative has been pushed by the franchise because, and maybe this is a stretch, but I think Neil O'Shea would have been in a massive, massive hot seat if Conley didn't bail Blazers out with Nurkic in the first round draft pick.
Right.
In that Plumlee trade. Because what if Denver fans may or may not be aware of, when that trade went down, the selling piece of that wasn't Nurkic. Mason Plumlee for a first round draft pick.
Right. And people forget that because of how well Nurkic played kind of down the
exactly.
stretch. But my question was, is what are the odds that Nurkic is a Blazer next year? Like at this moment, I know that's like really hard to project, but just like try to put some odds on it.
I still think that they're going to do it, and I think that part of if this is a teaching scenario or a lesson or however you want to
it might be a test. This. It might be one of those things where, like, if you can't handle this, man, we're not going to commit to 4 years of you.
And if they do commit, they're going to commit less money.
Yeah.
Because I think that's ultimately here. I don't think – even if Nurkic balls out, let's say Nurkic – figures it out and he understands when to turn it on, when to turn it off, like any player does in development. And he averages 17-9, 17-10, and gives Portland everything they need him to get. I still don't think that gets him a max contract, where a lot of people were talking about over the last 2 years that he has potential to get that. Mm-hmm. I think the only guys that are getting max contracts right now are the guys that give you like the – you know, the variance up and down, like a Jokic or a Porzingis, that impact the game so thoroughly. Because as good as Nurkic is, he's still the third option.
I think who Nurkic should be is a guy that impacts the game defensively that way. And then offensively, he kind of fills in he's a third or fourth offense option on offense and has big games here and there. But I just think defensively is where it's at for him. I don't know if he sees
it that
way.
He can be that. He can be that guy. We've seen it.
Yeah.
I mean, he had games against Denver where he took Jokic and made him non-existent.
Wrong. You know, Denver sucked against the pick and roll all year last year. That was and you know, if you recall,
I'm talking about Nurkic on the defensive end though, on Jokic.
Oh, right.
He absolutely destroyed him. You and I were talking about the lead up to that game because it meant so much for both teams. I was expecting Jokic to have one of those games, you know,
Jokic is funny because after that game, he said, you know, I think we were all just so nervous. Like we were too nervous for the game. It's kind of funny because like players never admit that kind of stuff. But Jokic being like just
being Jokic,
he's just like, yeah, no filter, whatever.
Our mindset wasn't right. Yeah, I mean, I could totally see that. But yeah. I think that. From the outside, at least from what I've watched of Denver this year, they seem to not necessarily gotten over that hump, but they're working their way towards it.
Oh,
and
for sure.
Particularly with the comments that I've heard from Barton lately and how they're learning how to win those games.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of days, I think I saw like five different Denver media guys tweet and retweet the same comments from everybody.
Because it was the best interview of the year, man. It was last night. It was just such an incredible thing.
Like everybody was like, that's a game last year that we lose. And I think that's for Portland. That's scary because the way Denver's feeling about themselves right now is not the way Portland's feeling.
Yeah, exactly. That's 100%. And I got to say, you know, the Nuggets it was a homestand and against, you know, some not great competition. Oklahoma City is like the big win, but, you know, they're struggling. So who knows if that's even a good win. But I just got to say that the team just seems so good. They seem like in such a great place. And I think for Denver, this is a game. It's not a must win by any means. In fact, it's one of those ones where you can kind of go in with as little pressure as possible given the circumstances. Like, they just don't need it. But at the same time, I'm just so curious to see how they approach this game. Like, I want to see the intensity and focus level and seriousness. And if they have that, I just think it's going to be such an encouraging thing for Denver going forward.
I want that great game. Like, I want that playoff game in November.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, for me, like, and this sounds so corny or cliche. For me, it's not about Portland winning or losing this game. Hell yes, I want them to win. But I want to see their attitude in the mindset the right way. Now, they've lost way too many close games already. The last second plays on against Milwaukee, against Memphis, the Clippers and Blake Griffin hitting a three. Like, Portland has been in like a one or two possession game in nearly every single game, and they've come up bupkis with the exception of the Dame game winner. Mm. So I definitely don't want to see that scenario play out again, because then it could become an issue. But
I want to see Nurk get benched. That's what I want to see.
I know you're pulling for. That's the matchup, though. I mean, because if indeed this was a benching for lack of effort on the defensive end, Jokic is not the guy you can take a night off against.
Right. Right.
But he may have the right kind of motivation going into this game beyond the fact that it's Jokic and his former team, but he may be getting the cattle prod from behind. Like, hey, you need to step this up too.
Who's playing most of the minutes at the four?
Right now it's by committee because Aminu is out.
Who's starting?
Aminu was. They've kind of toyed with different people.
I thought it's been
Vonleh.
I've been saying at the start of the season, I thought that Dame was the most irreplaceable, but I thought Aminu was the second most irreplaceable just because he unlocks that small ball, which is, I think, what really makes the team
with the
go.
Way he's playing, or the way he was playing before he went down, and it's not putting up crazy numbers, he's putting up 10,
no,
almost
he's not
a double
that
guy. Double.
Yeah, he's not that
but he
guy.
He was
yeah.
almost 10 and 10.
Yeah.
For, you know, the first 10 games of the season. But he was shooting, you know, 45% from three. And with the way Portland's depth is shooting wise, they have so many non-shooters that anybody who goes from non-shooter to shooter instantly opens up the floor for Dame and CJ.
Can Vonleh guard Millsap?
That's probably the best physical matchup for him because he does move his feet well enough.
Okay.
To step out and cover. He's not a plotter by any means. Let's put it this way. I would rather have Noah's athleticism on Millsap than Ed Davis's mentality.
Right.
Like, Ed has the smarts to cover him, but I don't know if he's necessarily laterally quick enough.
Yeah.
But I think because Stotts does favor the veterans, I think over the long haul, we're going to see more Ed Davis on Millsap. But we could see Caleb Swanigan as well. Swanigan has the build to go ahead and play with him, and he has the added benefit of offering something offensively.
Yeah. Lastly, before we get out of here, because I do want to wrap this up, but I asked Barton what he thought of, you know, consider this a homecoming, if it means something more. And he was like pretty adamant that he's like, no, man, like, this is all in the past. I don't even think back to that time anymore. Like, almost like his career. Let me see. Like, he says, that phase is over with, I don't look at it that way anymore. Like, basically saying Portland's not home to me. And so I thought that was interesting, but I was going to ask you about Plumlee because Plumlee spent some time there. What's your perspective on Plumlee's return? Does it mean anything to you? And what are your thoughts on Plumlee? Is there a connection?
I think everybody here liked him because of his workmanlike effort. Yeah. I think he'll get a healthy applause. And really, if you play for Portland for more than a year and you don't threaten to fight the media or start a dogfighting ring, you're pretty much beloved.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's really how it goes. I mean, Alan Crabb came back, and even though he had that monster contract that people despised, he got a pretty healthy dose of applause. Will Barton will get applause. Will the Thrill is still beloved in Portland by a lot of
people. He should be, man, because he's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Will's great. He's phenomenal, not just on the court and for what he brings, but off the court. That dude's amazing. Plumlee is much the same way. He was a guy that was front and center when the Blazers went from a projected 27.5 win team to a 41 win team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was a big part of that. And so people appreciate that, and they liked his effort. They liked the fact that he competed, even though he was overmatched more often than not.
Yeah.
I think he'll get a pretty healthy applause. But I don't think he was a guy that entirely resonated with Portland just because his time was so short. And that that team was basically looked at as a transition team.
Yeah. Well, Dan, thanks so much, man, for coming on. It should be a fun one. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope the Nuggets come out and just bury them. I have the sneaky suspicion that this would be like a huge springboard for Denver and a huge like spiral downward spiral for Portland. Because you guys go on the road after this, right?
Oh, God. The schedule gets absolutely brutal. It goes completely sideways. And that's why I was adamant for Portland. A lot of people were calling for Portland to go, you know, they needed to go 10-4, 12-2.
Yeah,
to start season because the schedule gets that bad that quickly.
So it'd be nice for Denver to kind of like send them off, you know, with a loss
on the downward spiral. You know, yeah. And for everybody else listening, if you want to see something entertaining, depending on which way this game goes, just make sure you stay tuned to Adam and I's Twitter. He's low volume unless the Portland and Denver are playing each other.
Dan, thanks so much. Everybody else, we're going to be back all week with brand new episodes. Subscribe to the show. Give us a rating on iTunes. It only takes a second, but it does goes a long way. Thanks a bunch. We'll be back next time.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.